Ford's new Explorer, May sales, and telematics next steps.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion. Chrysler. And by Hyundai. Learn more at Hyundai.com.
This is AutoLine After Hours with Gary Vaslash, episode 290 for June 5th, 2015, Discovering Explorer.
Watch AutoLine After Hours live at AutoLine.tv every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 p.m. Pacific or 19 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for AutoLine in iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to AutoLine After Hours. As you can see, John is not here. John is ill, so we're going to venture on without him, but not alone, of course. So we have Henry Payne from the Detroit News. Henry, how are you doing?
Gary, I'm good. Good to be with you. Thanks. Very good. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great, so don't worry. It hasn't taken me down yet, so we don't know what this malady would be, but we're okay for now.
That's good.
And back by popular demand, David Welch of Bloomberg. David, how are you doing?
Good. It's Throwback Thursday, so I guess that's why I'm here.
There you go.
Have you guys sanitized all the furniture, by the way? I've been sick. I just want to feel safe during the course of the
broadcast. I think they actually came in here with this big system, and they just, like, blew it all out, and so I think we're good to go here.
But he's at the ball game, not sick.
But should you start feeling woozy at any point here? Tigers are losing.
I want to know that producer Chip's been here with the Clorox Ready Wipe swabbing everything down.
Yeah, well, I think they treated it like it was an anthrax outbreak, but we don't know. But, okay, the reason that we're here and why we have this beautiful car here is we have Ari Gruneveld.
Yeah.
He's the chief engineer of the Ford Explorer, and he's immensely happy that I actually said his name almost right.
Yes, you did.
I said it right?
Yes. Thank you.
So, all-new car you guys been working on. Now, what's interesting that I hadn't realized that there has been an Explorer for 25 years?
Yeah, 25 years, getting to the 16 model year that we see behind us. 25 years and actually 7 million units sold.
Wow.
So 7 million. So it's a very significant milestone for us, the 25 years. Going back in my past, I'm very excited, obviously, to work on one of our iconic brands and products. Going back to 1993, so we started in 1991. In 1993, that was actually my first vehicle. So an XLT Forest Green 4x4 Explorer was my first vehicle, so it's very exciting to be working on that same vehicle.
So a lot of personal experience with this vehicle.
Oh, yeah. I've used it for my own adventures. So when I first bought it, I was an avid windsurfer and mountain biker. And as time has progressed, now I have triplets. So it's a different adventure. So
one for each row.
Yeah, it's been great for both occasions.
So, did the triplets influence how this vehicle was engineered?
Trust me, there's a bit of the triplet influence in the vehicle. So, yes, I always keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So tell us about some of the features that make this Explorer distinctly different from its predecessors.
Yeah, so back in 2011 when we came up with the new Explorer, so that was a very significant update that we did, basically all new. For 16, we've actually updated it's a very significant update. And keep in mind that our sales for the last 4 years, since we had that 2011 redo of the Explorer, have progressively increased over the 4 years. So we're really at the peak of our sales here, where we're climbing up over the 4 years. We decided to make another change to the Explorer. We're already leading the industry, and we made a change, and we had to get it right, and I think you'll find that we did. So the changes that we made, so we'll start off with a new look. So obviously it's a new look. Everything from the A-pillar forward is new. The fenders, the wheel lips, the wheels, the hood, our signature lighting that we have in the headlamps, as well as standard LED low beams, that's standard across the board. That's first for Ford. Our very prominent fog lamps that we have in the front of the vehicle, as well as the grill. We have a unique grill for each one of the models in the series. And and very differentiating between the various lineups. So in terms of that, so as we talk about the different lineup that we have a base Explorer, we have an XLT, we have a Limited, a Sport, and we'll talk about this a little later, the all-new Platinum. So we have a Platinum, really the pinnacle of the Explorer brand.
And this is a Sport that we have in the studio.
This is a Sport that we're looking at right now. But let me continue with some of the other changes that we've made. So on the side of the vehicle, we mentioned the wheels, the mirrors are different, the roof rack is different, a flush mount. Two benefits of that, the flush mount roof rack actually avoids water drops dripping on your head as you open the door. Also has the added benefit of improved aerodynamics. And overall, we've improved the aerodynamics on the vehicle by 5%, which is very significant for this vehicle. As you move to the rear of the vehicle, the tail lamps are new. The lift gate is new. The fascia is new, just as the front is new. And we've added some really cool features if I start on the outside. So we mentioned the LED headlamps. We also have a front camera wash and a front camera. So let's start off with the camera itself. So in the front of the vehicle, located in the center of the grille, you have a 180-degree split-view camera that you can activate inside the vehicle. You can see 180 degrees. So as you pull out of, a parking garage, as I live in downtown Chicago, I'm sitting at the A-pillar of the vehicle, but the nose of the vehicle is out before me. I can look left or right, and that's very beneficial. So that also has a washing feature, so you would expect that the front camera gets debris against it. Now, in parallel to that, on the rear of the vehicle, we have a camera. We've always had a camera. We've increased the span of that camera. But I don't know about you, but over the course of the winter, I'd find that I'd be wiping the camera to get rid of the salt grime off. So kind of along that theme, we decided, let's put a wash on the back of the vehicle. So wash that camera so people aren't wiping it with their thumb on a regular basis. It's a very simple execution, but it does the job very well, and it's really a first to the industry and the segment for sure. So in the inside of the vehicle...
One other thing on the outside, you can kick it now, right?
Yeah, we also...
You can kick the rear just like you can on the Escape.
So that's something that's...
One of the great features in automotive. I don't know why everybody doesn't have that feature.
Well, that's kind of near and dear to me. So typically, my wife and I are coming out with three kids, right? So she might have one and some other stuff with her, and I've got two, usually one under each arm. To have to put one down and watch them split all over the place and run around, the kick feature is great because then I can start... the loading process for the kids. It's really been a great feature.
How does that work? I haven't seen this yet.
So as you have the key in your pocket, as you walk to the rear of the vehicle, you basically kick your, call it your lower leg under the fascia, just a deliberate kick underneath there, and the lift gate opens up. So it's a hands-free operation.
Yeah. So you're not hitting a button or anything. Is it just some sort of motion detector?
It's actually sensing the presence of your leg. So it's calibrated very specifically not to sense other objects that would be doing the same. And again, you have to have the key in your pocket. But as you kick, and it's calibrated for it, and it's a feature that we have on other Ford vehicles as well.
We'll start in the Escape, right?
So it's on the Escape. We also have it on the Ford Edge, the new Ford Edge.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's a great feature. People love it.
Audi does it now. The Audi A8 has the kick.
Yeah.
So you're getting copycatted, finally.
Somewhat flattering. So that's a cool feature on the outside. We also added some other technologies. We talked about the wash, the LED. We talked about the kick. We also had active park assist always. We've now changed that to enhanced park assist. So active park assist was good for getting in parallel spaces. Now we've revised that or enhanced it that you can actually use it for perpendicular parking. So backing into a tight space, the system helps you with that. Somewhat autonomously, you have input into the system, but this is kind of as the progression of autonomous driving features enters into automobiles. This is along those lines. So perpendicular park, we also added park out. So if you want to get out of that same tight spot, the system will help you do that. And then another great feature that we added along with that is a side sensor. We call it side sensor. That enables the, say you're driving through a parking garage, like this is very relevant to me, driving through a parking garage or even going through like a drive-through, picking up your food at the bank or any kind of scenario where you're going through a drive-through. There's always that yellow pillar that has the rainbow of colors on it from everybody contacting it. So much like we have now, we have the front parkade sensors as well as the rear. Now we have something on the side of the vehicle that's detecting that post being present. So the driver is alerted to that as well. So that,
how many sensors are in this car?
We've got a lot of sensors. We have four on the front. We have four on the back. That's not including the sensors that are specific to the hands-free liftgate. But then we also have sensors on the side underneath the fascia detecting for those objects on the side of the vehicle. And you have that in the front of the vehicle as well. So there's quite a few sensors on the vehicle.
Yeah. I get it as a detector. It detects if you're overweight, too.
Well, actually,
just kidding.
But to a certain extent, yes. So we've some of our features that we've had for a while. We have lane keeping assist. Lane departure.
Yeah.
So basically, the system is reading the lines on the road, and it can detect when you're deviating from your path. So, say you're getting sleepy, you're driving down an interstate for hours in the middle of the night. It's going to detect if you're starting to bounce between the lines. And you can set it to either give you a subtle alert through a vibration in the steering wheel, or it can actually help auto-correct you to keep you within that lane.
What's the default?
The default for the setting, whether or not it's a... I believe the default setting is actually the vibration, and that the correction is something that you just configure within the cluster itself. It's a really cool feature. So... falling asleep while you're driving, a little coffee cup comes up on the cluster to say maybe you need a break. So along those lines.
Yeah. No, a lot of this stuff is, I mean, it's one of the things that's fascinating, I think, about the industry in general is how, I mean, just this generation, we've associated all that with luxury vehicles, and now all of that electronic safety stuff is coming down in the midsize utes and right down into compacts, I think, in the coming generation.
Right.
Although you were referring earlier to the Platinum. Now, that is undoubtedly a luxury vehicle.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. But on all the vehicles or all the series of the Explorer, we've made significant updates to the interior. So new door trim panels, significant changes to the electronic finish panel for the radio controls. Our customers told us, don't really like the touch-sensitive buttons. Give me mechanical buttons. We've got it now. Whenever I bring that up in front of customers or dealer bodies, they're like, bravo. They really like that feature. So significant updates in the interior of the vehicle. New front seats as well. We've improved knee clearance in the second row for occupants by our more efficient front row seats. So when you have a chance to look inside the vehicle, you'll see very significant changes. So let's get to the Platinum. So the Platinum is really, that's the all-in. That's the pinnacle of the Explorer brand. So we already mentioned that just below, say, the Platinum, you have a Sport and a Limited. What we were finding is that specifically on the Sport, one in four customers that were coming to the Sport were coming from a luxury brand. So they were coming from luxury, and oh, by the way, the vast majority, say 90% plus of those customers, were picking all the options on the Sport. So the Sport that we're seeing right here, it's a blast to drive. It is a very exciting vehicle.
So suspension tuning is different than on the other?
Yes.
Trims.
So as you combine some of the luxury elements of the Limited with some of the sporty elements of the Sport, the Platinum gives you the same powertrain. So you get that 165 horsepower, 350 foot-pound powertrain. But you also get a lot of luxury on the inside of the vehicle. So we're offering, for example, on the seats, the softest leather we've ever offered on a Ford vehicle. It's very luxurious. We call it Nirvana leather. It's awesome on the inside. The cluster is all electronic. It's an all-electronic cluster. That's really the best cluster we've ever put in a Ford vehicle. The door trims, the quilted pattern, the real wood, the real aluminum. Some people are, I've heard suggestions that, hey, that's not real wood. It's actually real wood. Part of Explorer is being authentic, an authentic SUV. And so the Platinum has all those characteristics in it. It's a very exciting vehicle. And then we added a 500-watt Sony stereo system that is, Henry, I believe you probably had a chance to listen to it when we were in San Diego.
Yeah. It plays nice.
It's we really brought in some of the technology that you have in home stereo systems and brought it into the Explorer. So they have what they call clear phase and live acoustics. It's a very impressive system.
Are you the only guys playing in this space, going to a platinum in this midsize SUV?
Oh, in the midsize. So what we also have is, addressing your question, within, say, the segment.
Yeah.
So why a platinum? I think that's what you're getting at.
It reminds me of what's happening with the pickups. The pickups, starting with Ford and Chevy,
right,
now got into these ultra premium. And it sounds like that's the same place this segment is
right,
headed.
So what we were actually seeing is, like, excuse me, there we go.
Sure,
ahead.
Well, you're saying the luxury buyers that were coming into this segment were loading this thing up with everything.
Yeah.
Does the Platinum have anything that the previous generation didn't have if you just walked in and checked every box? I mean, is there any, or is it more kind of just a marketing name that kind of adds a little prestige?
Oh, no, if you look at the interior of a Platinum, and we're going to have to get you into a Platinum, the full interior environment and package, the way it feels, the lighter color environment, mm-hmm, the selection of materials, the technology. So all the technology that we have available on the Explorer is in the Platinum. Everything's there. On top of that, it's a fantastic interior. On the outside, we have satin chrome finishes. So on the door handles, on the roof rack, on the door appliques, a very distinct grille as well. So lots of luxury elements on the inside. All the technology that we can possibly give on the Explorer. So basically your only choice on a Platinum for an option is whether or not you're going to have captain's chairs in the second row or a bench seat. Those are the options. So it's really the box checker. Someone who wants it all, the very best of Explorer.
Yep. So I want to a clarification. Now, so you said that the Platinum and Sport come with a 3.5 V6.
Yes.
But it's a EcoBoost, right?
It's an EcoBoost,
and,
yes.
And there's another 3.5 V6.
Yes.
That is not a twin turbocharged engine.
Right. So let's talk about the, so what's under the hood. So so we have our very capable 3.5 base engine. That's 290 horsepower. Then we also have the EcoBoost that we talked about that's in the Sport and also in the Platinum. That's 365 horsepower, 350 foot-pounds of torque. But I would say probably our proudest accomplishment on the 16 Explorer is the introduction of a 2.3-liter EcoBoost. We had the 2-liter EcoBoost. For 16, we've gone to a 2.3. So it's a familiar engine configuration that we're seeing on other Ford products.
Well, it's familiar to the Mustang.
It's on the Mustang.
Yeah, it shares a lot with the Mustang. Yeah, huge torque, horsepower. I mean, better torque and horsepower than anything you see from BMW and Audi, for example.
So compared to the 2-liter, we've upped the horsepower by 40 horsepower.
Yeah.
And the foot-pounds went up by 40 as well. So it's very significant in terms of gradability, acceleration. It's very noticeable. And in fact, it's enabled two things that the customers wanted. One was, hey, I want four-wheel drive. So now we have four-wheel drive coupled with the 2.3 EcoBoost. And I want trailer tow. So now we have a true Class 2 trailer tow option available for the 2.3-liter EcoBoost.
Class 2 is how many pounds?
3,000 pounds. So we have 3,000 pounds, and it really is a very good balanced of power performance and capability with that new powertrain offering.
What's the fuel economy like for these vehicles?
So actually, great. So in terms of the 2.3-liter EcoBoost, we've been able to maintain the 28 miles per gallon. That's best in segment fuel economy. So the competition's come out with other products, but in terms of our 2.3 EcoBoost, we've still maintained that best in class 28 miles per gallon highway. That's a really significant accomplishment. So basically, we've gone up 40 horsepower, 40 foot-pounds, added trailer tow, added all-wheel drive or four-wheel drive, and we've kept that fuel economy. It's a very significant accomplishment.
Well, and I having driven it, I really like that engine. And having driven the Mustang, you put a turbo 4 in a Mustang, it's got lots of torque, but it's a muscle car. I mean, a 4 just doesn't feel right in a Mustang. But you put this turbo 4 in a midsize SUV. It's a 4,600-pound thing. Mm-hmm. It's got plenty of torque. It's got the tow capacity.
Yeah.
I thought it was an excellent engine. I mean, you like the power of the 3.5 that's mm-hmm. in the Sport, but as a practical engine with a fuel economy, I thought the 2.3 was really
I'm glad you felt that way. I feel the same. Very proud of that accomplishment.
So do you consider this to be a midsize or a full-size SUV?
This would be a midsize SUV. So if you talk full-size, you would be talking more like an Expedition.
The reason I ask about fuel economy is, and it seems like a quaint question in this day and age with SUV and truck sales going crazy and gas at, you know, $2.60, $2.70 a gallon. But this segment has seen a lot of ups and downs over the past decade. I mean, it was huge in the early part of the 2000s. And then 2004, 2005, GM pulled out of it. It got so bad, mm-hmm. you know, getting rid of the Trailblazer and the Envoy. And I think they had two or three other variants the same truck as well. And the Explorer kind of took its lumps. Now it's back, but it's kind of risen and fallen as fuel prices have fallen and risen. So, you know, we don't know where it's going to go. Can this still be, you know, a really strong segment for you guys?
Yeah.
Single-word answer, because we're going to come to a break here in a minute, so.
Yes.
All right, you can take two or three warmer words.
Yes, it's still going to be very relevant. The fuel economy choices and engine offering that we have is going to continue to be very competitive into the future.
Okay. So with that, we're going to be taking a break and hearing from our friends at Bridgestone Firestone. Okay, and we are back. So we have some questions from the audience that's watching the show. So from AAH, not easy to say, guest 977. Now this is like I'm throwing a fungo to you. How do you think the Explorer Platinum is better than the GMC Acadia Denali?
Okay, so actually that's what part of the decision to get into the space of, call it the Platinum space, is we looked at the Denali, we looked at the Grand Cherokee Summit, and as you looked at transaction points, there is a space in the market for a very premium SUV. And so how do I think it's better? First of all, I'd really encourage that people have to see the interior environment. That's usually the wow factor that we have, getting into the vehicle. Second thing is the execution that we've paid attention to for 16. I think that the craftsmanship of our vehicle for 16 is, I will say, extremely competitive versus our competition, as well as the technology that we've introduced, as well as the powertrain offerings that we have. It's very, very competitive. I've been on drives. Obviously, we study the competition as well, and we compare ourselves to see what they're doing. I'm sure they do the same with us. We're very, very well placed.
So you're comfortable with
I'm very comfortable. Yes, I am.
Okay. So we have one from Wright Knight. Will the Explorer ever be rear-wheel drive-based again?
Well... So right now, I'll say that the focus for 16 and what we've been very successful with, as we've had sales increase since, like we talked about, the 11 coming up to 16, we obviously have front-wheel drive. We also have a very, we'll call it intelligent four-wheel drive system. So where there may be a draw for, say, someone going back to a throwback rear-wheel drive, our system right now with an all-wheel drive or four-wheel drive system and its ability to split the torque appropriately between the front and the rear is outstanding. So no plans right now.
Okay. And one more from the audience. Armand says, it looks like the Explorer name is painted on the hood where it used to be raised letters. Is that something new? If so, why?
Oh, actually, the Explorer on the hood is raised letters.
It's raised letters?
It is raised letters, yes.
Okay. So. Guys?
Hey, Ari.
Hey.
But back to the space. So now that you have Platinum at the top, like the Denali,
yeah.
I mean, this space is starting to look like pickup trucks, isn't it? I mean, you got a base $30,000 car all the way up to a Platinum, which is 50,
like
right?
54.
That's quite a spread. I mean, you're starting to make really nice margins. To David's point, I mean, if you want to keep this segment going, you're starting to make some nice margins up there with these different step-ups.
So we're giving the customers exactly what they want, and it's a space that we already see the competition in, and we're very competitive from a pricing standpoint, and I would argue that our features and our execution are top-notch. So,
are you adding production with this new model, by the way, with the all-new?
Oh, so...
In other words, you're anticipating more sales, I guess, is
part
of the question.
Let's look at last year. So we had about 280,000 sales of Explorer for last calendar year. So for 16, and we've started building them, as you know, because they're starting to show up in Dearborn, et cetera. And
so this is being built in Chicago.
Yes, Chicago assembly plant. We're actually seeing that the sales are say, 12,000 to 15,000. We're going to give the customers, and 12 to 15,000 a month, say, we're going to give the customers exactly what they want. So we're letting the market define what we need to produce, and we're going to meet that demand. So that's our intent. So I expect that sales are going to go up, yes.
I thought it was interesting to see that last year you guys exported 56,000 of these.
Oh, yeah. It's actually our number one exported vehicle. We go to, like, 100 markets.
What are the big buyers? What are the companies?
So,
I mean, imagine the Middle East is kind of...
Middle East, Canada, China. So the China market is really exploding in terms of their demand for utilities. That's really growing very quickly. I think by 2018, we're thinking that that total segment in China is going to be upwards of 1 million.
We had a story about this where the Chinese are liking big SUVs because with the traffic over there, they're getting massive road rage incidents. And Chinese drivers feel safer, you know, up off the ground in a big SUV.
Right.
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah, I think everyone does.
No, but not Americans do because they don't want to get in an accident. The Chinese believe that it'll be more difficult for somebody to, you know, do something in a road rage incident.
Is it essentially the same vehicle that we're seeing here that is being sold in China, or is it a... bigger vehicle?
We take into consideration unique customer requirements as well as unique government regulations, right? So we homologate the vehicles to meet the individual market requirements. But we have assembly plants not only in Chicago, but we have assembly plants in Venezuela. We have an assembly plant in Elbuga, Russia. So each of those markets may have different conditions. In fact, I'll go back to, say, Russia. So there's a long stretch of their season where the roads are very wet, and they don't really use salt, they use dirt. So for months on end, the vehicles are covered in a thin layer of mud.
Good thing you have those washers on.
So that's exactly right. So that was part of our rationale for saying, hey, that specific market needs something very specific for the rear camera because it was constantly covered in mud. They loved it when we came out with the concept.
I got a couple cop friends who love these things.
Right.
So why are these so attractive to the police? Is it the turbo V6?
You know what? It's such an excellent balance of package space and capability. So our police interceptors, that's a very much different vehicle than what you're looking at for retail. There's different requirements, different duty cycle. For example, most police officers don't want a center console because they're going to put in their own equipment in the center console area. Typically, they'll want to have a column-mounted shifter, for example, as well as we have crash protection up to 75 miles an hour, rear impact for those police officers that are frequently parked on the side of the road with a someone that they pulled over. So a very purposeful, Taurus-based police interceptor. They love it. So getting back to it, yes, the 3.5 EcoBoost is very impressive. The police agencies love that. But they also love, the base powertrain offering. Mm-hmm. So they have the ability to get a 3.7-liter powertrain configuration in the base Explorer-based police interceptor.
And did that switch over start with the 2011?
Right in that time frame, yes.
Yeah. So you had the unibody. So, it's a better handling car. I mean, the whole thing is better for police.
Yeah, so it's a very it's tuned very specifically for their job function and the conditions that they encounter. It's purpose-built. Mm-hmm. And we're doing very well in that segment right now. And because we're listening to the agencies and we're reacting very very quickly to their requests and getting ahead of their requests as well.
Is all-wheel drive a requirement of the police also?
That's where the vast majority of the sales are going. So that's a transformation that we've seen within the police segment. At first, there was a little reluctance, but now that they've seen that, hey, on snowy roads, whether it's an Explorer, whether it's a, call it a police interceptor sedan, it makes it very capable in a variety of conditions. Rain, snow, the beach setting, yeah, it's they love it. Yeah.
And those are all good things for civilians as well.
Absolutely. Yes. Okay. Yeah, it's yes.
Okay. So with that, we're going to have to thank you for coming on.
Thank you very much.
AutoLine. Sure. And any final comment you want to?
Just one quick question. What's the tax situation exporting these to China? Don't they get taxed over there? And I've seen cars costing $100,000 out of like 60 or something over here.
Generally,
what does a Chinese buyer pay for an Explorer?
So I couldn't give you the specifics of what they're actually paying over there, but there's different thresholds generally associated with the power of the engine and the emissions associated with it that call it like a luxury tax that might be passed on to the end customer in those markets. But I don't really have all the details on that to speak to.
He's an engineering guy, not the finance guy. So, okay, so, Harry, thank you very much for
thank
being on the show
much.
Today. And
I you.
Appreciate your time. So,
thank you very
and,
much. Great.
So now we hear from our friends at Chrysler.
There is no royal blood in this country. Nothing is reserved for anyone. It's all just out there, waiting for someone to reach out and take it. And the ones who do, these are the kings and queens of America.
You already know that you can listen to AutoLine's Industry Insight in places like YouTube and Stitcher, but did you know that you can also listen to it live in your car? It's simple. Just pair your smartphone with your vehicle's Bluetooth connection or plug into the aux jack. Then navigate to AutoLine.tv using your phone's browser. Find the show you want to hear and click play just like you would on your computer.
This is AutoLine After Hours with John McElroy.
It's that easy. Never be disconnected from AutoLine's top-notch insider information with AutoLine on the go.
Okay, and we're back. There was John. You just saw him, and we want to thank our friends at Chrysler for supporting the show. So that was interesting to learn about the Explorer, and just because we just had sales, it's interesting to note that so far this year, the Explorer is up 12.3%. Ford seems to be doing pretty well in the space of vehicles like that. That F-Series thing is a problem for them, not having that available.
Yeah, production ramp-ups. Yeah, it's always a problem.
Mm-hmm. It was a problem last year, too. I mean, this is a long rollout for them, and it's just it's hurting their profits. Everyone knows it's a temporary thing, so Wall Street isn't punishing them for it necessarily, but it's holding them back until they can get it ready.
So do you think this is just the nature of a normal launch, or does this have something to do with the aluminum aspect of the vehicle?
That's a good question. I'd have to think that the aluminum is an issue. Not that it's necessarily a problem, but because it's so new to everybody involved, including the dealers and body shops and everything else, that starting at the plant level, they have to be very deliberate and very very thorough in mm-hmm. how they bring this launch up to speed.
So they make sure they get it absolutely right.
Yeah, because I just look at, without having anything in front of me here, I don't remember anyone's truck launch, in particular Ford's, for a new generation of F-Series taking this long to go from the old one to the new mm-hmm. one and get into full production.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and you hope that's the case. I mean, the Ford folks, I find, to be very tight-lipped. Mm-hmm. I mean, they don't gab about these sort of details, but, everybody's watching. Everybody's watching
right.
an aluminum pickup with a microscope. Mm-hmm. And so I would hope they're very careful, because anything that goes wrong is going to be under that microscope.
So you know, one of the things that I was looking at, I just thought this was sort of interesting in the context. So for May... F-Series sales were off 6,650 units, And then I looked at how General Motors is doing with the Colorado and Canyon, their midsize, and they sold 1,782 vehicles, okay? And I was thinking, don't you think they really wish at Ford that they had a midsize vehicle that would sort of, like, if somebody was leaving, you know, saying, oh, I don't want to wait for the new F-Series, and I'll buy something else, and so they would go for a midsize? Do you think that they may be persuaded to come back into that space?
They could be, and they're... You know, there are rumors of, you know, a number of different competitors possibly doing this. Look, this was a controversial move for GM because the conventional wisdom said that you're not going to really get new pickup buyers. You're just going to send the cheaper people from the Silverado and Sierra to the Colorado and the Canyon. You're going to make less money, lower transaction prices on it. It's the same size pie. That hasn't really turned out to be the case because GM is still growing pickup sales for the large trucks, and they're putting out quite a few of these every month and making pretty good money doing it. Whether or not they can fill three shifts in that plant remains to be seen, but mm-hmm. it's been a very good venture for them so far. You really can't knock them in any way for it.
Yeah, so Silverado was up 10.6% this month, and
could Silverado be up 15% if not for the Colorado? Yeah, I guess
Sierra 3.6%. I mean, it's plus space. I mean, mm-hmm. it's they're not losing anything.
I'll tell you what, and I'm not a pickup guy at all. I did have a Ford pickup many years ago, and it's just it hasn't been my thing for a really long time. But that midsize GM pickup drives pretty nicely for a pickup truck, and it's really not that small. You can really fit a lot of stuff. I mean, that is a parking that thing wasn't as easy as one might think. I was in a few parking lots,
yeah,
really having to, you know, kind of look around me because the other row of cars behind you gets close pretty quick.
I absolutely agree with that. Yeah, I mean, when they drop one off, and I came out in the parking lot, and I thought, gee, they left the wrong vehicle. I thought it was a full-size truck, but it wasn't.
It's probably the sportiest-looking pickup on the market.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and it is. It's a fascinating competition. I mean, they took very different business models in part because mm-hmm. supposedly GM didn't have the money,
right.
the capital that Ford had to go all in on aluminum. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's too early to tell, but I think it's one of the great comparisons mm-hmm. going forward in segments to see mm-hmm. how these things work out.
All right, so this will be like a lightning round sort of thing for you guys, since you know the industry and you know cars.
All right, the sales numbers.
No, you don't need to know. No, see, you don't need to know them because I have them, and therefore you can respond to them. But I was looking at basically, you know, FCA, Toyota, Honda, Ford, and General Motors. Okay, so arguably the big guys, right?
Yep.
And I looked at the vehicles that had surprisingly low sales numbers. And I mean, and there are some that were very surprisingly low. Mm-hmm. Alpha 4C, they sold 40. Reaction?
Well, they're only planning 1,000 for the market this year. So,
does anyone even know it's for sale?
Good point. Dodge Viper, 58.
Rarified air.
Well, but that is an issue with the Viper. The Viper's been very troubled of late. I mean, the Corvette C7 is an absolute home run. So if you're looking into that space for a big front-engine car, I mean, the Corvette is it, mm-hmm. and the Viper is suffering from it.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point, because the Z06 is a pretty awesome machine.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's
priced lower than the Viper.
Amazing. Yeah, it's you can't beat it if that's what you're looking
okay.
for.
But so here's something sort of interesting.
That was a little bit of thunder with the lightning.
To the point of the 4C, does anybody know it's for sale? So year to date, they've sold 295, but they've only sold 289 Vipers. So they've actually outsold the.
It's cannibalizing.
There you go.
Yeah. I'm a local Alpha dealer and ask for a discount. I love that car.
We'll get a bigger number here. The Ram cargo van, they sold 191. So do you think that the city, what do they call the transit like vehicle?
Objection relevant.
ProMaster.
You say so.
You guys got nothing? All right. Scion IQ, the one that's about the size of those two chairs put together, 64.
Well, and again, it goes to a troubled brand. I mean, Scion is like Viper. It's one of those industry brands that's in trouble. It's on the bubble. I personally love the Scion FRS, sports car. But what is Scion? I mean, is it sporty? Is it youthful? Yeah, I mean, I say Scion is actually investing quite a bit. And this year is coming out with a couple new models, I think this is a big.
So this will redefine them, or this will be a make or break?
I think this is a make or break this year.
What do you think, Dave?
Why isn't it selling so well? Okay, myth number 47 of the car business: young people like small cars or small vehicles. No, they don't. That's typically what they can afford. Now, millennials are starting to make more money. They can afford something bigger. Gas is cheap. They don't need something that's super fuel efficient. I think all those things play against something that's that size.
Mm-hmm. Young people's car, maybe. Honda CRZ 246.
It's a clever little car, but again, how does it exactly fit in the Honda lineup? I mean, I think the Honda Fit suffers from the same issue. Honda does mainstream very well. I mean, Civic, Accord, CRV just sell top retail in their segments.
Absolutely.
But then
right.
Honda likes to do these sort of different cars like Fits and CRZs and rightly so, Cross they're niche vehicles.
And...
Yeah. They're niche vehicles.
Yeah, the stuff they've done on the periphery of their big, meat and potatoes cars that do high volume have I shouldn't say never, but rarely done that well.
Yeah. No, I quite honestly, to your point of the 4C, I mean, I thought that was one of those cars that was out of production and they weren't making the CRZ anymore. But then I saw a Honda commercial recently and it's in there, so I'm like, oops, I'm wrong. Okay, we are now going to be shortly taking a break here. Okay, before we go, Toyota FJ Cruiser 8. You got nothing? Come on, 8.
They still build those? I think that's headed out the door.
When I saw the number on the list, I thought the same thing, that they're just phasing it out, mm-hmm. right?
All right, so we're going to take a break, and we're going to hear now from our friends at Hyundai. So we'll be right back.
We could tell you about the years of research and development, how we forged advanced high-strength steel to make the frame stronger yet lighter, the countless hours spent testing the suspension and tuning every sound from the engine to the trunk. But until you get behind the wheel, you have no idea. The completely redesigned Hyundai Sonata.
Our office in New York yesterday.
Okay, and we're back, and we're just getting some insights here. Can you share that or no?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. I wrote about this yesterday. So we had Carlos Ghosn, who's the chairman and CEO of Renault-Nissan, and the Bloomberg offices in New York yesterday. And they had set out a goal in 2011 of getting to 10% market share in the U.S. by the end of next year. So they're at 8.4 right now. They were at 8.2 when he stated the goal a few years ago, and he said they're still going to hit it. And, of course, we asked how, because 1.5% of market share is heroic in the U.S. market to get, unless you're starting off with absolutely nothing and have a white-hot product that Americans have been clamoring for, and I can't remember an example of that in the 15-something years I've been...
Well, or a deep recession, where you get, like Hyundai will gain that during a recession because of affordability.
Sure, but 1.5% is just in 18 months is really tough to do. Now, they do have a new Titan coming out with a lot of different engine options, and they didn't quite have those options a few years ago, or even they don't have now. They're going to have a diesel option, so that may get some more people coming in. They facelift for Altima and Sentra coming, and a new Rogue, and they're going to be able to import some Rogues. They've been kind of running flat out on that and in the U.S. and haven't been able to fulfill demand. So they have room to grow, and they can.
But I think that's the answer. Is, I mean, all new Murano, all new Maxima. So there's just a lot of product.
So we drove the Maxima last week. What did you think, Henry?
Yeah, Maxima as well.
Right. Yeah, great car, but not a huge segment, not a huge volume segment, but a very good car.
Yeah, so, I was looking at their numbers, and it's basically been under 60,000 units a year, and to get to that.
Right. And I talked to Larry Dominique of TrueCar about this, and Larry, of course, used to be the former product planning for
former Nissan,
Nissan
guy, yeah.
And he said, look, it's going to be very challenging. Another thing to look at with Nissan is, of the mass market car makers, okay, ignoring the luxury guys who are spending like crazy $6,000 a car or whatever it is to get people to drive off with one, no one spends more on incentives, average car, than Nissan, except GM and Chrysler. Mm-hmm. And GM's been cutting back pretty steadily this year. Chrysler's been upping them. Mm-hmm. FCA, but it's really Chrysler. The former Chrysler brands, but Nissan has been spending more. So Larry asks a good question: If they even get close to the 1.5% market share again that they want, can they do it in a healthy way mm-hmm. without spending a bunch of money
right.
on?
Mm-hmm. You know. Well, you think of the product mix. I mean, if they've got that tool in their box, these are halo cars they're coming out with, Maxima and Murano. I mean, it gets a lot of buzz from us in the automotive press, brings people into showrooms, and then you have a refreshed Altima and a new Rogue, which are I mean, that's the meat of the market.
Right.
So this is a push. It's a push time for them.
Mm-hmm. I think they'll have a tough time with Titan, not because it's a bad truck, not because the new engines won't get some attention, but people who own F-150s and Silverados and Rams and even Tundras,
yep.
they're pretty happy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. It's like selling
it's the motivation.
Yeah, it's like selling caddies against BMWs and Audis. I
mean, you have to give them a reason for why you're going to
sure.
do that.
Yeah.
And I think that we're seeing with Ram that they're doing sufficiently well with their Echo diesel offering. That mm-hmm. the fact that Nissan's coming out with a diesel is you know
it just gets them in the game.
Not that great shakes anymore. Had they not going back to your question, Rivera Nataro, if I said that correctly, the price of the Explorer in China is seemingly around U.S. $80,000. So
wow,
that's what you were. But what did you say that the base price of an Explorer is here?
Explorer's 30.
30, and yeah. then it goes up to 54,
he said. Yeah, this Platinum is going to be base 49, I want to say. It goes yeah. up to 52, I believe. It's a pretty good spread.
And then our work had an interesting point. Wasn't the holdup of the F-Series the steel chassis supply?
Oh, that's right. There was a holdup.
There was a problem with the supplier there. But
that's not the whole reason that this whole rollout has been that they've lost production last mm-hmm. year and continued to be tight on inventory this year.
Mm-hmm.
We don't exactly know the answer.
Mm-hmm.
To the Ford PR person who will complain to us afterwards about the content of this broadcast. But, look, I stick to it. I think they must be very thorough on how mm-hmm. they bring all of this up to speed.
Yeah, as well they should be, though. I mean,
yeah,
because, people are paying, because as you pointed out earlier, Henry, I mean, pickup trucks are no longer the sort of thing that you buy if you can't afford a car, right? I mean, now...
They're extraordinary inside. I mean, you could yeah. live in them. You could eat off the seats.
Exactly.
They're so nice.
And you pay for that, so it's not like they're giving them away.
One thing about this, with the whole aluminum truck, navel-gazing, hand-wringing scrutiny that's gone on, when this whole thing was first coming out that they were going to do this, I was in New York writing about something else entirely different, but I had been on the auto beat for a long time. And having been in New York for and kind of looking at automotive press coverage as someone who's interested as opposed to somebody who lives here and is in the middle of it every day, I was kind of wondering, is this a bunch of people in Detroit getting a little bit too concerned and too introspective over an aluminum pickup truck? Audi's had a damn near all aluminum car for
right.
a long time, and I don't see A8s flying into pieces on the road. Granted, it's not using the same duty cycle as a pickup, but I kind of wondered, like, is this people in Detroit, because something is so different, getting too hyped up over something? And maybe are we scrutinizing this too much?
Mm-hmm.
This is more of a
see, here we are months
later. Automotive
months
community.
Later, we're still dwelling on
still
the implications. Okay, and then Abhi, I may have said that incorrectly. If I did, I'm sorry, wants to know if I know these sales numbers for Kia, like Kia Cadenza, K900 in USA and Canada market. Well, I do this, and this is, I quite nearly didn't have this, surprisingly enough, but I had it on my desk, so I just brought it along. So this is just US sales. The Cadenza, the month of May, it was 526 units. Year to date, it's 2930. That's down. Last year at this time, they sold 4380. That's a really nice car that nobody knows exists, I think.
Yeah, I think that's right. But if you want some surprising vehicles that fell in the month, look at Tahoe and Yukon.
Oh, you can. Okay. Just, he wants to know K900. K900, that's their Equus, Hyundai Equus variant.
The dog catcher's car. it's actually a really nice car.
That's,
now that I've made fun of the name.
133 for May. Last May, it was 227. And for the year to date, it's 542, which is down from 592 last year. So, what was it? Tahoe and
Yukon.
Okay, so Tahoe, for May, they sold 7,119, which was down 22.9%. And Yukon, 3,455, down 21.6%. Now, let's see. Yukon is up 0.4% for the year. So that's sort of odd. How do you have a 0.4% of a car?
Well, what I suspect is going on, and they don't have a, GM doesn't do a sales call anymore where we can kind of get these answers, but what I suspect is going on is because it has sold so well, and I know they've been wringing production out of the plant where they make their full-size SUVs, I think they've sold so well that everybody's running low on inventory for this stuff. And I know that GM has been diverting production to Escalade because it makes so much money. And the Escalade ESV sold 40 or 60% or something?
No, Escalade ESV was up 23.4% for May. They're up 102% year to date. They sold 1,044. They sold, and this surprises me a little bit, they sold 1,617 regular Escalades, which is down 2.8% for the month. Okay, month over month, but for the year they're up 76.1%.
Escalade is. Well, and goes to the question, too. I mean, this is one of the things that we love to riff about, but I hear increasingly among industry people is, why not create an Escalade line?
An Escalade line?
Yeah. I mean, here you have...
like separate from Cadillac?
Yeah, here you have Cadillac that just can't get traction in the luxury market.
What's the logic for that?
So
it's the only vehicle in the Cadillac line that's selling really well.
Exactly. Yeah. So why wouldn't you make all of your SUVs Escalades? I mean that thing.
All right.
That is gold in the
ELR
in
is
the
up
branding
23%.
That's right. They sold
116.
Yeah, they brought the price way down.
They were on the other list, but we didn't get to that. But okay. So Henry, yesterday you and I were at a program, and Alan Beatty talked to us about Chevrolet. So Alan Beatty is the president of General Motors in North America, and he's an executive vice president of the corporation. And so we got to see the new Cruise, which we can't talk about.
That's right.
But we can talk about what Alan Beatty was talking about.
Nobody listens to embargoes these days.
Oh, we try to be nice. Come on. And, you know, I thought it was very, very interesting what Beatty was talking about in trying to position Chevrolet as being a very innovative company. And, I mean, short of things like the Corvette, I mean, that isn't my perception of them. I mean, my perception of them is that they're a company that is making good, solid vehicles, and that's pretty much it.
But they're trying to change the perception. I think that's the whole point.
That was the message?
Company talking point, because that's the spirit behind the Find New Roads ad campaign. It's sort of the American spirit, American ingenuity, coming up with new stuff. Chevy's an awesome brand in the sense that you can sell everything from tiny Sparks and a Volt to a Z06 to a Suburban and a big pickup truck. And even the Toyota and Ford brands don't really have that kind of breadth, because they don't have anything like a Z06 and really don't have, arguably, Prius is like a Volt or Volt is like a Prius.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, And those two brands are the only ones that are really close to it, but Chevy sells everything. So it's tough to change perception for a brand that does so much stuff that just bread and butter,
right?
You know, family sedans, pickup trucks, and stuff like that. But they're trying to do that. That's part of what that whole Android and Apple announcement was the week before, that they've got this. They put the technology there before Cadillac.
Yeah.
And part of that would not only get the volume, sales volume, because they're selling more cars there than Cadillac, but the other part was to show that Chevrolet is an innovator and has this great integrated phone car technology in there. Personally, I think it was a mistake. Not that they necessarily had to do Cadillac first, but there aren't that many Cadillacs in the line. How hard was it to just put it in Cadillac and Chevy to start out with?
Yeah. Well, but I do think what Beatty is talking about is really interesting. I mean, I think there is a moment right now in the auto industry where you're having this changeover to the digital world. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're seeing that in every model that comes down the line. They are fundamentally different inside than the last generation because of this tech revolution. Mm-hmm. And so I think Chevy sees, generally, as David says, sees an opportunity to rebrand itself from a vanilla brand to something that's a little more exciting. But it's also a moment, I think, where they can take advantage of this tech. And with the 4G LTE is very smart. I mean, I talk about young people. That's the sort of thing young people care about. They want to come in their cars with their smartphones and couple right away. Right. And there's this arms race right now over Google CarPlay and Android Auto to get in. So I think
it's Apple CarPlay.
I'm sorry.
So
yeah.
we want to give them their due.
Yeah,
but I thought it was but you know I thought it was
but I think that's smart. But just one other piece, Gary, and that is design. I mean, again, Chevy has never been associated with design, and you hear Chevy people now talking openly about bringing the Corvette and Camaro look into the rest of the brand, and you're seeing that in Malibu. I mean, Malibu is the most interesting looking Malibu in generations. So there's definitely a heightened brand awareness.
I think you can argue that when they went from the two generations ago to the Malibu was a bigger step change than the Malibu that exists now to the new Malibu. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, if you're saying two generations ago, counting the one that's coming out soon?
Yes.
Okay.
So we have the existing
the
Malibu.
Basically the one that put them back on the map.
Right.
That was an excellent
car.
That was
a huge change.
It was, and actually the great thing about that car was the proportions were fantastic. This is when I was at the old Business Week. I did a design story on the Malibu for that reason. Mm-hmm. And they did a lot of stuff to basically, it's a front drive car, so you don't have the great rear drive proportions with, you know, the long dashed axle and short overhang. But they did a lot of stuff to try to trick the eye into thinking it was there. There was also a lot of ornamentation that made the car look a lot more expensive than it was.
Right.
That car was a breakthrough for them in a lot of ways, stylistically especially. And, you know, and that's the period when they the second generation Cadillac CTS came out, mm-hmm. which had a lot of really interesting things in the sheet metal and mm-hmm. in the side panels and stuff like that. They were doing island hoods. They were doing a lot of stuff that we hadn't seen GM do in generations. And then I think what happened with the Malibu that's still being sold right now,
right,
it was the wrong platform, or the platform is just kind of compromised design.
Well, and then the Fusion came out, and everybody looked at the Fusion and said, oh, my God, look at that.
Right.
And then it became very difficult to you to look at a Malibu in the same way that you did when the Malibu first came out.
But I think that's what Chevy's doing. I mean, you look at the Malibu, the new Malibu, the 16
right.
Malibu looks a lot like the Camaro. I mean, they're doing the same thing down their lineup mm-hmm. that Ford did with the Fusion. They're injecting that, trying to inject that family DNA that starts with Camaro mm-hmm. down through the line.
So, you know, just a quick thing before we break and say goodbye to everyone. You know, this whole digital thing. So there was an announcement earlier this week that Toyota is now investigating using the system that Ford is using, this SDL system. And you know, and I got to wonder, and for people who are not aware, so Chevrolet came out and announced that they're going to have Apple CarPlay and Android Auto across the board in their vehicles. I think there are a couple of exceptions. Equinox and something else, I think, don't get it.
Trax.
A lot more of the cars can use Apple than Android to start with.
But here's the thing that I wonder about is that if you look at it, I mean, everyone pretty much has an Android phone or they have an Apple phone, right? And some people have Microsoft phones, but not many, and somebody still have Blueberries, but why should car companies have a separate system? I mean, why would Ford and Toyota be going after a separate system rather than just saying, hey, you know what? The world has gone to Apple. The world has gone to Google. Why should we fight?
I mean, they're coming up with a whole separate system.
Yeah.
That's
the smart device link technology is being used by Ford. I mean, that sounds really great, and they've got some company, some Livio, some small company. I mean, it's just like, gee, why don't we have Linux systems in cars? I mean, but the hell, that's an operating system that's out there already. I mean,
I think Chevy's really smart. in the space. I mean, they're saying you come in with what you got. You can choose our system if you want,
right?
But you can put your Google system or Android or Apple system in here. It's your choice. No extra charge. No subscription upcharge. I think that's really smart.
Mm-hmm.
Depends how the Ford and Toyota systems work. Mm-hmm. Is this a matter of downloading one app and then you can connect whatever you're using to their cars?
Well, I mean, it sounds like apps have to be delivered or developed for their system, and then it works in that system.
Then that could be a big problem because if they don't already have the volume, people are not going to be developing apps for them as quickly and readily as they would for Apple and Android.
Right. So in other words, that if you know you're the aforementioned young person and you're going into a dealership and you said, oh, you know, do you have native CarPlay or do you have native Android Auto? And they go, no, we got Smart Device Link.
Yeah, what is that?
Yeah. I'm not going to go for that. But maybe not. You know, I mean, maybe this is an obsession like looking at aluminum.
It could be. No, I don't know how the thing works. If your phone can connect to that through, you know, no matter what you're using,
mm-hmm.
then it could be, if it's like a universal translator for any system any phone has, including people who have stuff other than Androids and Apple-based phones.
And who are they?
It could be smart. But that's a fair question, but still. Otherwise, yeah, it's pretty dumb. Then, you know, but I don't know.
All right. So do a lightning round. One question. Then we're going to go away. Frank says, with Sergio, because I know you want to talk about this, with Sergio basically begging anyone to merge with him, will he and the UAW accept a bid from a Chinese company? They have the cash and they want a U.S. company.
If the Chinese company has real volume and real money, yes.
I can't speak to it. I think the whole topic is fascinating, that Marchionne is shopping. I mean, that tells you not only the capacity issues that, for example, Europe has, but also the huge regulatory mm-hmm. costs that these companies are facing. That at this moment, when Marchionne has assembled this, eight-brand empire, now he's shopping it. It's extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
The corollary I have is that the problem with the Chinese companies, there are two in terms of doing a deal with them. One, they don't really have any technology that Sergio wants, and that's one of the reasons for doing a deal.
Mm-hmm.
And two is they're really difficult to get a deal done mm-hmm. with, period. But, you know, if he just wants scale and volume and one of those has it, I'm sure he'd look at it. It might not be a sale. And in fact, it probably won't. It'll probably be some kind of merger alliance type mm-hmm. of deal anyway. You know, maybe a fully integrated merger, but there'll be a swapping of stock and sort of a melding mm-hmm. as opposed to just selling to the Chinese and walking away. Mm-hmm.
And Sam Fiorani wants us to know that the Ram cargo van, which was one of the aforementioned on the list, 191 units, is out of production.
See, I was right. Objection.
Okay, it's out of production, but it still sold more than the 4C and Viper combined.
What about the FJ Cruiser?
Well, I don't even know how to do the math that would get me that high to multiply
There's a
that.
Club of guys who brought the FJ in May. And it's extremely exclusive.
All right. So with that, I want to thank you guys for being here today.
Thanks,
Henry
Gary.
Payne, Detroit News. You can find your stuff at Detroit News.
DetroitNews.com or HenryPayne.com. I do cartoons also.
That's right. He's a political cartoonist and does very well. David Welsh, Bloomberg, and you're on Bloomberg.com?
Mm-hmm. Right, Bloomberg.com on the Bloomberg Terminal.
The Bloomberg Terminal, yeah.
If you have $25,000 a year, please subscribe.
Okay. So that was a plug. So if you don't have your Bloomberg Terminal at home, get one, and you can see David's stuff.
I've got something out of this. The pay is terrible.
Okay. So you can get my stuff at AutoFieldGuide.com. Friend AutoLine at Facebook.com/AutoLineNetwork. That's AutoLine Network, all one word. Follow AutoLine on Twitter at twitter.com/AutoLine. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. And we will be back here next week. Thanks a lot for joining us.
AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion. Chrysler. And by Hyundai. Learn more at Hyundai.com.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live. Get your daily news fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.